I was privileged last June to be a part of the last service of worship held under the leadership of Dr. Joseph Lowery before his retirement. He invited me to be a part of the celebration of his ministry of more than 45 years, and he made it clear to me that he did not invite me because I was a bishop. He said, "I invited you because you're my friend." And so I stand here tonight to introduce our speaker, and I stand not because I'm a bishop, but I stand because I'm a friend. Dr. Lowery has established himself as a leader throughout this nation for so many years. I suppose when history records the struggle of our people through these many years, one of the names that will certainly be among the foremost leaders will be Dr. Lowery. He's championed the causes of social justice with eloquence, with perseverance, with biblical and theological grounding. He has spoken all across the world, and he is known all across the world as a champion of justice. We're privileged in this United Methodist Church to claim him, although in my judgment we have not properly given him his due in our denomination. And he comes on this 25th anniversary, and he comes not as one who has been a champion in the past, but one who is currently a champion for social justice. He represents us at the highest seats of power in this nation. He has been sought by presidents of this nation, politicians, business and religious leaders all across this nation. I suspect many of you do not know of his long history. Right hand to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., original founder of SCLC, preacher, pastor, and a friend. And so at this time, let us express our appreciation for his coming and addressing us on this special occasion.
Bishop White, thank you for very kind words of introduction. Good to be here with Woody and his lovely wife, with whom I have enjoyed warm and loving relationship for many, many years, beginning with the Commission on Religion and Race of some years ago in our church. Chairperson-elect, and brothers and sisters and bishops, good to be here with you and see this magnificent turnout of celebrating 25 years. Good to be here. I will not start calling names because I will leave somebody out and be sorry. So I'm good to see all my friends and blessed colleagues in the struggle, in the journey. Galloway United Methodist Church in Jackson, Mississippi, is located across the street from the state capitol. It was the site of a kneel-in by Charles Golden and Jim Matthews in the 60s. Both were bishops. One was white, the other black. Both were turned away, denied the privilege of worship. There was no room. There was space, but there was no room. Last week, in preparation for 2 days of hearings on the issue of 47 deaths by hanging in the last 5 years in Mississippi jails, members of the voluntary staff of our commission asked the officials of Galloway if relatives of inmates who had died by hanging, all ruled suicide, might meet in one of the church's many facilities prior to their testimony. Some of the relatives were white, some were black. The answer was the same as it was 30 years ago. There was plenty of space, but no room. The hearings were held, significantly, in the state Supreme Court. I presided in the Mississippi State Supreme Court. How long must we look to Caesar to accommodate God's works? And how long will they who call themselves God's people give priority to the things of Caesar? 25 years, DMCR, during which time everything has changed and nothing has changed. There was a biracial panel that heard testimony, including 4 black legislators, a white preacher, a white lawyer, a black lawyer, the brother, one of 3 youths slain in Philadelphia, Mississippi 30 years ago. Everything has changed. We occupied the Supreme Court. Chairman of the Senate Finance Committee sent me word that they needed the room that afternoon. I told him there was space, but no room. Everything has changed, but in the house of the Lord, 30 years later, nothing has changed. A white woman who dated a young black male near Philadelphia, Mississippi, where Swerner and Goodman and Cheney lost their lives, voluntarily testified that she did not believe that the young man she dated committed suicide. Everything has changed. And yet the young black male, arrested under strange circumstances, is dead. Nothing has changed. There are 42 black legislators in the Mississippi legislature. Everything has changed. And yet 2 brilliant young black women born in Mississippi who passed a difficult bar exam in Louisiana where they practice have consistently failed the Mississippi exam and cannot obtain comparative data where white applicants switch scores around and got by. Nothing has changed. Against the backdrop and paradox and contradiction and juxtaposition of facts and factors, we come now to celebrate 25 years in the United Methodist Church against the glaring evidence and deafening cry of pain in a land that is strange. In the 137th Psalm, the Israelites found themselves in Babylon, a strange land. Their oppressors asked them to entertain them. Isn't it interesting how oppressors always want the oppressed to entertain them? Hello. Sing us one of the songs of Zion. But our songs are not designed to entertain. They are designed to praise God, not please man. They are songs of hope. They're songs that, and we have to be careful today that we don't let the beat substitute for the meat of the word. The Israelites said, how can we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? They hung their harps on a willow tree. The historicity of the experience of the Israelites and that of African Americans parallels in many ways, but here it parted. We did sing the Lord's song in a strange land. We did not hang our harps on the willow tree. We sang. And let me move on, because I don't want to be too long, but I don't want to be too short either. I didn't ask for this job and didn't want it. If Woody hadn't called me, I wouldn't have accepted it. Because I'll leave here with fewer friends than I came with. But one thing about being retired and not tired, hello, is that you can sing the Lord's song in a strange land and not worry about it. They ain't got no appointment to worry about next conference. Already got my appointment. Hello. Let me be a little definitive about what I mean in the context of this occasion by a strange land. A strange land is not just a matter of geography. Wherever the sacredness of human life is denied, it's a strange land. Wherever equal opportunity does not exist, that all God's children might rise, shine, and reach their full potential, that's a strange land. Double standards of justice, that's a strange land. In 1957, when SCLC was born, the median income of African Americans was 57 to 58%. 36 years later, that median income is still 57 to 58%. A black sect cult squatted in an urban setting and refused to move. They were within hours bummed out. A white sect squats in a rural setting. Patient deliberations go on for days and days and days. It's a strange land in which we live. Black males are arrested with a few grams of crack and get 5 to 10 years. One of four black males between the ages of 20 and 29 are in trouble with the law. But white folks get arrested with 10 times as much cocaine and get 6 months and then get put on probation. It's a strange land. A major church in a major city has a change of pastors, and the power of the appointment gives an outside denomination man opportunity to pastor where others are passed by. It's a strange land.
strange land. Now let me define what I mean by singing the Lord's song. Singing the Lord's song is more than lyrics and notes. It's sweat and tears. It's losing your life to save it. It's raising the right questions, even when the answer is not obvious. Singing the Lord's song means sometimes singing in the valley where you can't hear nobody pray. Singing the Lord's song sometimes means when you need the mass choir, you have to sing a solo. Singing the Lord's song means singing anyhow, even if you ain't the soloist. 25 years ago, black Methodists gathered in the strange land of this denomination, in this place, Cincinnati. Black Methodists gathered here to sing the Lord's song in a strange communion called ME, then Methodist, then United Methodist. We sang the song at that time called Integration. We fought for the dissolution of a jurisdiction and the merger of conferences. Hello? We sang in the key of good intentions, but bad timing.
Look out now.
At the moment of our crescendo for integration, the community was crescendoing for self-determination. Hello? While we were seeking to master the pipe organ in the big place for classic compositions of desegregation, other voices and forces were mastering the hammer for empowerment. Now, lest I be misunderstood, let me define integration. Integration is not the systematic movement of all things black to all things white, but the emphatic movement of all things wrong to all things right. That's integration. And we have let them define integration for us. And so we have experienced the diminution of our institutions and the dilution of our power in the name of integration. Now, lest I be misunderstood or understood too clearly, there is much that I'm proud of in the history of our church. Educational opportunities, productive colleges and universities, scholarships and loans that have enriched our lives and blessed us with opportunities, better than average pensions. I thank God for the insurance, for some folks guaranteed jobs, for institutional vanguardism. Methodism was out in front, raising social issues in antisocial environments. We matched Satterfields with McGoverns. We even accepted a lion like George Wallace and tolerated a lamb like Joe Lowry. Our historicity has sung the Lord's song in a strange land. But 25 years later, it's time not just for a new hymnal, but for a new hymn, for new challenges, and for old hymns with new vigor. There is virtue in raising the right questions, even if you don't have the correct answers. I read recently where post-merger survey indicated we had elected more bishops since merger than before. That's a marvelous achievement. I have nothing against bishops. Some of my best friends are bishops. I was independent before I retired. I didn't just get that way. Some of my best friends are bishops. Nothing wrong with that. Nothing against bishops. But the question is, not have we elected more bishops, have we saved more folks? There have been more episcopates, but is there more power for the people? Are there more growing churches? Are there more prophetic ministers and ministries? Have we so elevated the bishop that we've denigrated the pastor? Have we made the bishop the end rather than the means to broader and more comprehensive service? Is our only criteria for success in the ministry the bishopric? The bishopric is an important post in a connectional church. But do we render shepherding at the closest point of contact with the sheep less significant when our criteria for measuring effective ministry is the election to the episcopacy? With our eyes solidly on that prize, we may lose focus on the way of the cross that leads home. Calling is sacred. Election is a political. There's nothing wrong with politics or an election, but election should be a result of a sacred response to a sacred calling, and calling not the result of political response to ambition. Singing the Lord's song today might mean a genuine and intensified appreciation for the critical importance of the shepherd, where the rod and the staff comfort and guide and inspire the sheep. Singing the Lord's song 25 years later may mean, and I'm trying to raise the right question. For if you don't have the right question, you ain't never going to find the right answer. Hello? Singing the Lord's song 25 years later may mean more than waiting for the director to search through tired repertoires. It may mean innovative, creative search for new direction. Does the old system and BMCR must be the new pioneer, finding new frontiers? For the old frontiers have faded into the horizon of yesterday and hardly seem relevant to the dawn of tomorrow. Does the old system of appointment serve the needs and interests of a black community committed to self-determination? Or is there a created alteration, if not alternative, to address the issue of maximizing participatory people's witness and matriculation in the system while still honoring the, you know, the Revised Standard Version? There is even a new King James translation. Hello? 25 years later, singing the Lord's song may mean a new version of old truth. If we don't find ways to reverse present trends will reverse us. Caesar learned to change. Why can't we? I remember when I was coaching a girls' basketball. I was teaching in a small school where you had to do anything that had to be done. I was chosen. The principal asked me to teach, coach girls' basketball. When I coached, the forwards never crossed the middle of the gym, and neither did the guards. The guards played the whole game on defense on this side of the gym, while the boys went everywhere. And the arenas watching the boys were full. Television televised the tournament. It was exciting. While the old way that the girl played grew duller and duller, and the arenas were empty. And finally somebody said, we need an innovative move. We need to be creative. We need to respect the principle of basketball, but we need some revised versions.
And so now the girls go everywhere. Forwards go everywhere. The guards go. Still playing basketball, but it's more exciting. And I saw the tournament on television, just like the boys were there. I'm suggesting that BMCR needs to be that catalytic agent which finds a new version of an old game that can meet the needs of a new day, lest we be satisfied with the status quo and sink into the woodwork with the past. New dynamics bring new dimensions of interest and support. Typewriters gave way to word processing. I interviewed a young lady for secretary. They asked, how many words you type? She said, what's the difference does it make? You have a word processor. I said, excuse me? Distant knobs on television gave way to little remote buttons. My wife calls them the devil's invention. I'm sorry she can't watch three programs at one time. Somebody was singing the song of renewal and revival. After all, we are Black Methodists for church renewal. All right. Not just for ourselves, but for the church as a whole. From the perspective of holistic exegesis, those churches that are growing, with few exceptions, are not the non-renewables. They are those who run and don't get weary. Walk and not faint. They mount up with wings like eagles. They're not pecking around in the backyard looking for chicken feed. Rise up, Black Methodist. The church for you doth wait. What's here ain't working? What's your suggestion? Are you willing to experiment? Are you willing to risk losing your life in order to save it? Only God knows what the future might hold if we sing the Lord's song in this strange land. We know what's going to happen if we don't sing the Lord's song. But if you sing the Lord's song, you can't tell what God may have in store for us. Hello? I lost a page, Woody. Yeah. I was careful. Devil stole it, but the Holy Spirit brought it back. Black folks in the community of faith have always been the sources of spiritual power. Challenge before us is more serious and critical than it's ever been. For us to be the sources of power, not just to empower ourselves for political gain, but to empower ourselves to be sources of power for the whole church. Brother Henderson, Cornelius Henderson, and I were at the airport together, and we rode together in a taxi. It had a little white woman driver. Weren't paying attention. They got a lot of white women driving cabs, all kinds of women. We didn't pay attention to it. So we talked about the church, talked about ministry, and she sensed that we were servants of the Lord. And just before we got to the hotel, she said, can I pray for y'all? No. I never had a taxi driver say, can I pray? She said, I sense that one of you is going to preach the word tonight. Can I pray with you? And we said, pray. As long as you can watch the traffic and pray, pray. She prayed. She prayed. And we felt the Spirit. Yeah, and I felt glad. I said to Cornelius, you know, we did something right. Our presence inspired a taxi driver to want to work with the traffic while she prayed. Don't, isn't that the key to the Black experience? We've always been the spiritual gadfly. We've always been the moral agitator. We are they who've stirred the consciences of the nation. It's time once again for Black Methodists to stir up the church.
And if it don't work out, that's God's prerogative.
All right.
Yeah. God's prerogative. But I wanna give it a try. Yeah. I used to play ball. The worst thing ever happened to me was to get called out on strike. Yeah. It made me sick to stand there and hear the man say, strike three, and I got the bat on my shoulder. If I had to strike out, let me swing at the ball. Sing the Lord's song in a strange land. We need to witness so that more taxi drivers will hold out the light, you heaven-bound soldiers. The black presence in America has always been the moral conscience, raising the right questions even when we didn't have the correct answers. Oh, we're called today, 25 years later, to raise the right question. Don't be afraid. If you're a bishop, you raise it at the highest level. Raise the right question. You can't raise it in the council. What you doing there? There is no virtue in adding color if it doesn't add character. You lift it to a position of power in the cabinet. Sing the Lord's song. If you're not going to sing the Lord's song, we might as well have anybody else there. But to make a difference. We didn't die on the road from Selma to Montgomery, and Valerie Uso didn't die just to change the color of government. We died to change the character of government. We are the salt of the church, and the salt have lost its savor. We are they who've been the moral impact. We are they who've been the moral agitators that stirred up. When I left Mobile in 1961 to go to Nashville to work with Charlie Gold, and the Mobile Press Register had a headline, "Local Agitator Leaves Town." And I got angry about it. And old Sister McKinney said, "Son, don't get upset." Said, "Come on, take me home." I took her home. They were these big wooden houses with a great big hall wider than the house.
Yes.
The room was small, but the hall was wide. In the back of the hall was a brand new washing machine. She took me by the hand and carried back to see that thing that shakes in there. She said, "That's the agitator.
Right.
Ain't nothing gonna happen till the agitator works." Nothing gonna happen till the agitator works. But when you can have a brand new machine, you can have all the power you need, you can have good washing powder, but until the agitator starts creating tension, starts stirring up things, only then will the dirt be separated from your fabric and the water rise up and take the dirt out and leave the clothes clean that you may wear them once again. Oh, Black Methodist for Church Renewal, it's time to start agitating. If you don't, who will? Galloway ain't. If York Street don't, Galloway ain't. I know better. The English don't get excited. I said it for effect. I conjugate for you if you want me to. In the nominative and the subjunctive. Make you feel better, I'll translate it into Latin and translate it and conjugate it into dative. But if we don't, Galloway ain't. Oh, Black Methodists, as we seek to empower the church to serve this present age, remember, we are called to be the moral conscience. We are they who've been the light. I heard another story the other day. I hadn't heard it in a long time. I was in New Orleans doing the desegregation of schools. White people boycotted the school, and a little black girl named Ruby Bridges' mother took her to school. And I remember seeing it on television. She had to walk between two soldiers in front of her and two soldiers
in the back of her. But she walked proudly into the classroom. Nobody in there but Ruby Bridges. She was in the classroom. But I noticed as she walked along, somebody cursed her. Ruby Bridges smiled. Kept walking in the classroom. When she got on the steps, some of the children jeered her. And she smiled. And kept walking in the classroom. At the end of the day, the same thing went on. They cursed. She smiled. They jeered. She smiled. And then that night, when Ruby Bridges went to bed, the blackness in her soul came out. As she knelt to say a prayer, she said, "Lord, bless Mama. And Lord, bless Papa. And Lord, bless Grandma. And bless Grandpa. And bless Aunt Mary. And Lord, bless that white man that cursed me when I went into school this morning. Lord, bless that little white child who jeered me when I went to school this morning. In the name of Jesus, amen." I'll never forget Ruby Bridges. She represented the soul of the black experience. We are they who must smile at those who jeer at us, but go on into the classroom. We must pray for those who despitefully use us, but go on into the Sunday school room. We must pray for those who would denigrate us and diminish us. And yet, we must go on and be innovative and creative and challenge the church. If it dies, doesn't it have to die to live?
Yeah.
Sing the Lord's song in a strange land. We are the agents, we're called. God can empower us. Have we lost our faith? Do we believe that God's power won't work? Oh, I carried my wife 2 years ago to Memphis to see her mother. Willie and I were just talking about my wife's mother. She's something else. I'm scared to tell how old she is. Might get back to her. But she's at least 90. And just as spry, we called up the other night to say hello to her. And the little girl answered the phone and said, "Nana and her boyfriend going to see B.B. King." A boyfriend, a young man, he's about 78. I'm trying to find out what Nana putting down. I want to go that way myself. But I cared during the Christmas season to see Nana. And the Liberty Bowl was being played in Memphis. Alabama was playing Illinois. And I wanted to see the game because Alabama had its first black quarterback. And I had to help the boy. I wanted to see the game. You see, they knew we could run the ball. At that time, they didn't know we could run the team. So I had to help the boy. I opened up the paper to the television, and lo and behold, it wasn't there. And I called the Memphis paper. I said, "Sir, I don't see the Liberty Bowl being played here in Memphis. Surely you're going to televise." He said, "No, it's blacked out." I said, "You mean whited out?" No black had anything to do with that decision. It was purely white decision. He said, "Well, whatever it is, Reverend, you ain't going to see it in Memphis." He said, you're going to have to go 40 miles outside of Memphis. And I told my little niece, I said, "Bring me your compass." I whipped up my geometry, got a map, and put the point down and set it for 40 miles and drew a circle. And I looked just to the west of Memphis across the Mississippi River. There was a place called West Memphis and then Forest City, Arkansas. I told my wife, I said, "Call the driver. Fix us some turkey sandwiches. Get me some Coley Coley. We got one more river across. Ain't we always got one more river to cross?" See, I went on
on and got the car and went on across the river. And while I was riding, I thought about Genesis where it said, I, being in the way, the Lord led me. That's what King James said. But the Lowry version is, the Lord empowered me. I just wasn't in the way. See, the picture was coming down. I just wasn't in the way. I had to get up and get in the way. Went on across that river, checked into the Holy Day Inn. Got the biggest suite they had. That black quarterback and I beat the devil out of the University of Illinois. Black Methodist for church renewal, God's power. God's power is available. It's not God's power that's bankrupt. It's not God's power that's a shortage. It's not God's power that's out of style. It's not God's power that has lost its potency. We got to get up and get in the way. I don't know what it is that stops you from getting in the way. Is it your covetousness of your position? I don't know what it is. Is it your raw ambition? I don't know what it is. Are you too comfortable? Are you at ease in Zion? I don't know what it is, but whatever it is, get up and get out of the way. God can do it. God can turn midnight into day. I can put a new joy in my life, new bounds in my walk, new trickle in my talk. God can make everything all right. Oh, yes, He can. When the darkness would hover over me, there's a light that hurricanes can't blow out. There's a light that Georgia Power can't cut off. There's a light up yonder, and I just got to get in the way. He can turn midnight, and I'm through, but let me tell you, in 1982, two black women down in Pickens County, Alabama, were voter registration activists, and they would go around registering folk to vote, and they put them in jail. Their only crime was being black and political activists. And they put them in jail. Julia Wilder was a woman in her 60s who was a mother and grandmother, a good, solid citizen. Maggie Bozeman had taught school for 35 years. They put them in jail. We went down and said, let our mothers go. And they wouldn't let our mothers go, and they took them off to jail, and some people want to burn down the courthouse. I said, no, let's don't burn down the courthouse in this strange land. Let's sing the Lord's song.
God, oh, no.
And so we organized and said we're going to march from Pickens County, Carrollton, right on the Mississippi line to Montgomery, and we're going to make them pay for this terrible tragedy, and we'll stir the conscience of the state and perhaps the nation, and we'll set Maggie and Julia free. And I announced the march for Saturday morning, 3 weeks from there, and just before the march, that Wednesday, I think it was, a staff member down in Carrollton called me and said, Doc, said the sheriff is messing us up. I said, what are you doing? He said, he's going around to all the colored people, giving them hams and turkeys. He said, don't y'all fool with Lowry. Don't y'all fool with SCLC. We got good relations in Carrollton. Don't let them agitators, don't let them outsiders, don't let them prophetic, no. Don't let them meddlesome folk, don't let them stir up our good thing here. And he said, I'm afraid, he said, Doc, they're going to mess. I said, well, whoever comes will be the Lord's crowd.
Yes,
and we're going to sing the Lord's song. I don't care if there ain't nobody but a duet. Em and me will be there. My wife and I will be there. And the man on the phone said, well, I'll be. I said, well, that's a trio. And he said, my wife here, she said, she'll be there. I said, that's a quartet. Good God Almighty, one but three in the fire furnace. Shadrach, Meshach, and a bad Negro. That's enough. I said, we'll be there that Saturday morning. We got there that Saturday morning. Wouldn't you know it's cold that morning? Even a little sleep came down. This all right. We were expecting about 200. Only about 80 or 100 came. I said, Lord have mercy. In 1982, will my folks sell themselves out for ham and turkeys? In 1993, will black Methodists sell themselves out for hams and turkeys that come in different forms and structures? Lord, have mercy on me. I but we're going to march anyhow. I said, whoever's here, get you some extra clothes and wrap yourself up, and we're going to pray. And we prayed, and we're going to sing the Lord's song in a strange land. And we started out marching, and the first stop was a place called Aliceville, about 15 miles away. It was cold as the devil, and I didn't say nothing to nobody. My heart was heavy. I was sad. I was afraid that we wouldn't be effective in freeing Maggie and Juliet, and I was hurt that my people had sold us out and let us down for hams and turkey, but I didn't let anybody, didn't even let my wife know how sad I was. We just kept on singing the Lord's song and marching. We got to Aliceville in record time because it was cold, and we had to march briskly. And one of the staff members, Cotton Reader, said, "Doc," said, "it ain't but 80 of us. Let's spread out. It'll look more for the camera." I said, "The hell with the camera. It's cold. Let's wrap up and keep warm. Let's keep on marching." And we kept on marching and singing the Lord's song. And everywhere, every step I took, I said, "Lord, you need to help me here. You told me to go, and you said you'd be with me. My God, have you forsaken me? Have my people let me down for hams and turkeys?" And we marched and marched. And let me tell you something. When we got to Aliceville in record time and came around the corner, there were 100 Negroes standing there with ham sandwiches and turkey sandwiches waiting. Just go ahead and sing the Lord's song in a strange land.